I'm actually pinch hitting for Dana Shelton, who's our policy director. Dana had to be in Washington today. Many of you know there's some major announcements at HHS, including FDA's releasing their graphic warning labels that are going to go on cigarette packs, and HHS is releasing a strategic plan on tobacco. So that's why many of the feds had to leave Denver to get back to D.C. Late last night. So I'm going to be talking about the state and territory initiative. I have nothing to disclose. I'm from Kentucky, but I don't have any sort of financial, other than a lot of my education might have been subsidized by tobacco money. Went to the land grant school. And so, but we thought it would make sense before we talked about the CPPW program to kind of frame who OSHA is and what our relationship is with the state program so that you have some understanding of why, when this allocation came from the Recovery Act, why we thought it makes sense to spend the money in the way that it was. So OSHA has a budget of just over $100 million that's appropriated each year. Last year was $105 million. Most of that money goes right out the door. We don't keep it in-house. 80% of the money supports the National Tobacco Control Program. So this is money that goes to all states, District of Columbia, a number of tribes, and some national networks to support. They're funded to maintain a comprehensive tobacco use program that will use evidence-based policies to reduce tobacco use in the community or state. We work closely with these communities, with the states and with the tribes and territories. Each grantee has a project officer who works closely with them, and it's truly a cooperative agreement. It's not like a block grant. We've just given them money and they're going out and they're doing something. We're actually working closely with them with a set number of objectives that they've set up over the five-year program. These are the program goals, are kind of what you would expect. States and territories are expected to use the evidence-based interventions that we know work. We've talked about the MAP strategies today. There's also WHO's Empower strategy. These are all the same evidence-based interventions, just framed in different ways. In OSH, it's our hope that the policy initiatives, and while this is not an exhaustive list, would look something like this. So first, we would have states that would be focusing on smoke-free policies, price increases, and aggressive media campaigns. And then after that's been accomplished, or that's already kind of in the works and is working well, then you would work on the more aggressive and advanced interventions. You'll notice that a lot of these phase two interventions have sometimes legal questions. They're more likely to prompt litigation. Reducing retailer density using either licensing or zoning restrictions. Point of sale interventions like the graphic warnings at the point of sale that New York City's done. And then expanded smoke-free policies like those that go into multi-unit housing. Or tobacco policies like David talked about. Austin's already smoke-free, so that's why it makes sense for them to work on some of these phase two interventions. Now, at OSH, we just don't expect the states, they're not on their own. Like I said, this is a cooperative agreement, and we work very closely with them. In addition to having a project officer who's very involved with the state and their activities, we also have health communication staff in the Office on Smoking and Health. We have an epidemiology staff that's made up of economists, toxicologists, epidemiologists who can work closely with them, and then policy staff, which is the shop that I'm housed in. Many of you are probably familiar with the documents that we put out in OSH. Our office supports the Office of the Surgeon General. We staff the Surgeon General for the Surgeon General's reports that come out. And then the state programs, if you're not in a state program, you might not be as familiar with Best Practices for Comprehensive Tobacco Control. That's a document that was released in 1999 and then updated in 2007. And it provides guidance for state programs on what's the appropriate program structure and it also provides recommended funding levels. So state-specific recommended funding levels broken out into five areas. And they're actually the areas that David showed in Austin. So it's state and local interventions, health communication, cessation, administration, and then surveillance and evaluation. So best practices breaks down not only for the states what's your total recommended funding level, but what's your recommended funding level in each one of those areas. So finally, before we start talking about CPPW, I thought it might be helpful to kind of understand some of the fiscal issues. If we look at this slide from right to left, if we combine all funding for tobacco control programs among the states, among federal money that we give them in OSH, the state budgets, and then what little money that they actually spend from the Master Settlement Agreement, it comes up to about $600 million. Now CDC, under best practices, we recommend $3.7 billion. So we're recommending five times what the states are actually spending. And we know that the tobacco companies are spending about 20 times that. They're spending $12.5 billion on marketing and promotional expenditures, and most of that money goes to reduce the price of tobacco products. So while we know one of our most effective interventions is to raise tobacco prices, the tobacco companies are very smart. They know that one of the most effective counter interventions is to reduce the price. And so that's how they're spending most of their money. And the states aren't void of tobacco-generated revenue. If we combine all excise taxes and settlement revenue funds, there's over $25 billion, with a B, that states have. They're spending 3% of that on tobacco control. They need to spend 15% of that to get to the CDC recommended level. So when this money came down the road, it just made sense to us that we've got this national program in existence. States aren't spending enough money. This is an effort to kind of build up our tobacco control program a little bit more, even though it's only over the two-year program. So the $128 million that was allocated for both obesity and tobacco. Hold on, I've lost my place. So one-third of that $128 million went to tobacco, one-third of it went to nutrition, and one-third of it went to physical activity. So of the one-third that went to tobacco, it was broken into three components, which are creatively called component one, two, and three. Component one is $15 million that was made available to all states, DC, and territories, and it was non-competitive funds. The states needed to apply, they needed to identify what MAP strategies they were going to undertake, and it was not as comprehensive as the CPPW plan for the local communities, where they were given, in some cases, as Wayne mentioned, $12 million, $13 million. The states really received in the hundreds of thousands of dollars range, and so they were expected to focus on one MAPS intervention. In some cases, they focused on multiple interventions because there were cross-cutting things. For example, smoke-free and media made sense together, and then a little bit of the money spent on social support services, but they were only required to focus on one. Then there was competitive monies that were made available. 20 states applied, 5 states were made awards. I'll go through that a little bit later. And then $44 million was made available for state quitline expansion and media, and I'll talk about that as well. So for component one, as I said, there was approximately $15 million went to all states, DC, and 8 territories. And so some examples of what some of the states were doing. South Carolina, for many of you know, they've had a very good history over the past 2 years of adopting local smoke-free policies. Cynthia's group, A&R, actually has given them an award for the past 2 years. They're the state that's had the most local policies that have been adopted. So South Carolina thought it made sense to use the money for a media campaign to hopefully continue the kind of the ball rolling in South Carolina to get more local communities adopting laws. And in fact, 2 communities were funded under the local CPPW program. So the state funding will help support not only all communities within the state, but also the 2 CPPW-funded communities in South Carolina. Oklahoma specifically is working on overturning preemption and adopting a smoke-free policy. Oklahoma has a weak smoke-free policy in existence, and there's preemption in the state that precludes local communities from adopting smoke-free laws. We've already been very active with Oklahoma. They've had a series of meetings with their state health department, a series of regional forums. We've had staff from our leadership and scientific staff who've gone there to talk about the science of smoke-free and the science of what we know about preemption and how it really stifles innovation and policy adoption for smoke-free. For New York, for point of purchase, they're proposing a visible display ban. I'll show you some examples of what that could look like in a moment. Minnesota is interested in increasing the price of other tobacco products. There's an issue right now where there's a large disparity in Minnesota between the tax on cigarettes and the tax on other tobacco products. They're trying to raise that equity a little bit. And then Colorado is interested in increasing Medicaid utilization, specifically utilization among the Medicaid population for the evidence-based medications that we know are available. So if we look at just real briefly in New York City or New York State, this is an example of what it looks like now when you go into a retail store. It's really just an advertising opportunity for the tobacco companies. So these are actual pictures from New York State. What they're proposing is something very similar to what we've seen in Australia, Canada, and Europe, and some Asian countries, where there's an opaque shelf. It's behind the counter. You can't tell what's in it. A clerk has to go to it and open the case, and it's not the advertising space anymore. So this is some of the ideas of what New York State's interested in doing, and I know several of the CPPW local communities are also interested in doing some of these interventions. Now for the tobacco component two, this is the money that was the competitive fund. So 20 states applied, 5 states were awarded money. Mississippi, we're going to hear from Roy in a moment. They're kind of one of our shining stars. Mississippi has an opportunity to adopt a comprehensive smoke-free policy for the entire state, be a model for the rest of the Southeast where there are no smoke-free policies. Massachusetts is interested in graphic warnings at the point of sale, similar to what we've seen in New York City. There's litigation going on right now, so they're kind of that plan's on hold, and they're waiting to see how the litigation weighs out. They've revised their plan to put that on hold, and they're going to be working on reducing retailer density, similar to what we've seen in Santa Clara, San Francisco, and other California communities where they've banned tobacco use or tobacco sales in pharmacies and reduced the number of retailers that can sell tobacco products using zoning and licensing restrictions. And then Oregon is interested in tobacco control integration, so integrating tobacco control activities within all elements of the Department of Health, so even areas of the Department of Health that don't typically think about tobacco use. And if anyone's interested in that, I've got a long list of what they're doing. I'm happy to go into that in more detail a little bit later. So for component three, there was $44 million that was made available to expand existing quitline services. So if the quitline wasn't 24/7 in a state could expand their quitline to 24/7. If there's multiple populations for languages in a community, you could use that money to expand quitline services to meet multilingual needs. And then CDC recommended that 30% of the funding be spent on hard-hitting media, because we know that the media will drive quitline utilization. So that was an idea, or that was a recommended funding level. And some states are spending more. New York, for example, I think is spending 90% of their money that they were allocated on quitline services. Now, that was appropriate for New York because they had a robust quitline. Another state that's had their quitline services decimated in years past, that would not have been an appropriate use of their money. And that's where our project officers worked very closely with the grant applications to make sure that they reflected the real need and was going to be as effective as possible in the community. So I think it's important to realize kind of the context of where we were before CPPW even came, before that money even was put in there. We were really in a ripe environment for policy change. 21 states increased their state cigarette excise tax in the last 2 years. That's great news. Bad news is only South Carolina dedicated any money to tobacco control. So we've got to really work on that a little bit. Smoke-free-wise, 10 additional states have adopted smoke-free policies. Cynthia talked about the almost half of states that have smoke-free policies today. Actually, South Dakota went smoke-free today. Voters approved a law last week that then went into effect today. And then on the federal level, there's been a lot of activity as well. The federal excise tax increased from 39 cents to just over $1 per pack. FDA was granted the authority to regulate tobacco products. And then the PACT Act, which is a lesser known piece of legislation at the federal level, that prohibits the mailing of cigarettes through the U.S. Postal Service and increases fines and violations for that from a misdemeanor to actually a felony. And so now that it's banned to send tobacco products through the post office, and since FedEx and UPS, which are the major delivery carriers in the U.S. that are non-post office, have a voluntary ban on this, this basically shuts down internet sales for tobacco products. There is some litigation pending with some tribes, but that was another major piece of legislation. So Roy's going to talk about Mississippi. As I said, they're one of the five communities that received CPPW money competitive. And